dropping in the breeze, one leg missing, both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him, the VA budget's just stretched to thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast War. We can't make it here anymore. And that big old building was a textile mill. It fed our kids and it paid our bills, but they turned us out and they closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore. You see those pallets piled up on the loading dock? They're just gonna sit there till they rot, 'cause there's nothing to ship, nothing to pack, just busted concrete and rusted track. Empty storefronts around the square. There's a needle in the gutter and glass everywhere. You don't come down here unless you're looking to score. We can't make it here anymore. The bar's still open, but man, it's slow. Tip jar's light and the register's low. The bartender don't have much to say. The regular crowd gets thinner each day. Some are maxed out on their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink, and you gotta have proof. Distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore. Can't make it here anymore. that done closed down, along with the school and the hospital and the swimming pool. Dust devil dance in the noonday heat. There's rats in the alley and trash in the street. Gang graffiti on a boxcar door.
That's James McMurtry, one of my favorite singers. You can go up on the internet and find him on YouTube. He's all over the place. Sings some really good hard-hitting stuff. I think I'll play another one at the end of the show. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana. Nice day today. Been pretty all day today. Yeah. Had to drive another 100 miles today and now I'm back and we're back in the saddle again. Terrible Tommy here on September the 3rd, 2014, Wotan's Day. David Lane's favorite day. That's right. And we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And we're at resist.com, the big giant website. And you can reach me at tmthomasmary_metzger@yahoo.com. Or you can call our big national message line at 559-670-1473. Now the box 401, that's where you send your snail mail and your donations. And thank you for getting them in here for September. A lot of you sent them in already. That's good. And we'll pump these radio shows out to you, man. Yesterday we had a hell of a problem. A little bit of equipment problem, mostly my problem. I get in a hurry, get nervous, get shook up, and make mistakes. But anyhow, we had the show in two segments, and then I had to have a webmaster when I make a mistake like that. And if I don't have time to do it, she put it together and sent it out. So I hope you enjoyed it. It was a lot of meat in that radio show as far as I'm concerned. That's right, a lot of meat. And what the hell's going on out there? You know, I see that everybody around the country, the press has got everybody crying about these two reporters. They got their heads chopped off. They lost their heads. Well, I don't get too excited about reporters. I've been abused by more reporters than you can think of. I've been lied about by more reporters than you can think about. So I don't really get too darned excited, you know, whether it's a head chopping off or run over by a train or what else when it comes to reporters, because reporters are nothing but foot soldiers for the corporate press, in which there's, just a few corporations own and control all the radio stations and most of the TV networks. So I thought that was interesting yesterday that the Chinese government wasn't letting this press corps into that part of China where they're having some problems. And that's right, that's good, because every time you let the corporate press into an area, things get much worse. Look at there in Missouri. Now, if there had been one or two reporters came out there and wrote up the story, one, you know, to the left, one to the right or whatever, it wouldn't have been a big deal. But when all the press shows up and all the cameras show up and reporters from all over the world, then the monkeys are going to come out to play and demonstrate. Whereas if it would have been one or two reporters and like that, they'd have come out and marched around, yelled and screamed, and then went home, and that would have been about it, except going to the funeral, you know. So if you're the leader of a country, especially small countries, it's hard for them to defend themselves. Keep the press out. Keep the sons of bitches out, you know. I'd like to. I believe in free speech, but I don't think corporate press is free speech. I believe it's corporate propaganda by the ruling class and the rich to tell you just exactly what they want you to know and no more. I think I mentioned yesterday now they're crying about these two guys got their heads chopped off. Well, it seems that during the same period of time, 23 Saudi Arabians had their heads chopped off even for petty crimes. And these Saudi Arabians are our allies, been United States allies for years. They gave us bin Laden. They gave us a lot of the 9/11 people. They've screwed us in the back every time we turn around, but we kiss their ass for their oil, you know? So that's the way that goes. So why don't you see the corporate press screaming to high heaven and all the ministers and all the mayors and everybody screaming about, oh, how horrible Saudi Arabia is? They chopped off 23 heads in about the same period of time. I'll bet you anything you haven't seen that on the radio or TV. It took me a little while to dig it out. We have reporters all over the place. We got people digging for news all over the place. And that's the only way it's going to get out there. So anyhow, tell all your friends that. See, hey, you know, Saudi Arabia is our ally. We give them all kinds of weapons and everything else, and we get their oil and all that. But did you know, the women can't even drive over there. At least they couldn't before. I'm sure it's the same. Women couldn't drive a car, and if they didn't, if you're not in a ruling class, you couldn't be drinking because that is a sin against Allah, man. But of course, behind closed doors, you know, the rich guys in all their flowing robes, King Abdullah and the boys drink and whore around like any reprobate in New York City someplace. So anyhow, there's your ally. There's your, all you Jesus lovers out there, there's your ally. The Saudi Arabians, oh man. In fact, they got to keep an eye on George Bush Jr. Yeah, they got one of the top Arabs down there from Saudi Arabia. Has even moved to Texas and lives down there by George Bush and the boys, so he can keep an eye on these guys and tell them what Saudi Arabia wants. Yeah, what about that? So call in these radio shows and ask them about that. Hey, how come Saudi Arabia is our ally? Call in these right-wing bastards. You know, Sean Hannity. Oh, God. Rush Scumbaugh and all those guys. Say, how come you're not talking about the 23 heads that went rolling down the hill over there in Saudi Arabia? Well, last night, old rogue progressive was talking about this deal over that he got out of the Guardian newspaper, a big long article about this big new program between the military-industrial complex and colleges and universities. Remember how the kids used to demonstrate and burn things and everything else against this kind of stuff and recruiting for war on campuses? Well, it's totally turned around now. They've got this program working, and they got them on the campuses, and it's to find out and study the people who are peaceful demonstrators, not the people who tend to be violent. You know, they do that all the time. Not the people going to march even in the streets. They got a new program now. They want to study the causes and what's the situation with those that disagree totally with the policy of the government and so forth, but aren't violent. They want to know because, you know why? Because I'm pretty sure that someday they may turn violent. And so they got this program going and installing this. And, of course, there's going to be a lot of, you know, snitching on your friends and all that kind of stuff. And so they're building a whole file on all those kind of people, which that's even the talk show people and people like that, you know. Just about anybody that like that's going to be subject to being on that list that, hey, we got to watch them. We may have to cut them off at the knees because they're probably going to one day be driven across the line because of things we do and become violent. So if I get time, I'll run a little bit of that clip later on. And the other one was this new thing about legal capitalism or law capitalism, and what that is starting up. That's starting up there in Washington State too. Now it's interesting that there's so damn many so-called liberals up there in Washington, but some of the worst nasty Big Brother type ideas are fostered up there in Washington State. And this one is that they're going to charge people, poor people, lower income people, for everything that happens if they get in a jam with the courts and the police. They're going to charge you money for your stay, the food, of course, your court-appointed attorney. They're going to charge you for all kinds of things that never got charged for before. Yeah. So, and it's going to be, and the next step, of course, is going to be debtor's prison. So you some guy get jacked up on some simple crime, maybe even just having marijuana or something, he's going to be forced to pay for everything that has to do with his trial and everything else. And he's going to, and then if he gets so far in debt with that and can't pay it, well, we'll do like the English did back in the old days. Put them in the workhouse. That's what they, of course, we're already doing that with millions of people now in prison in this country, private prisons, where they're, a large percentage of them are working. And people say, oh, that's good, they're working. But no, these pay-for-profit prisons are making lots of money. And it's for their best interest and livelihood and making money to get as many people in prison as possible. So there's a symbiotic relationship between the judges, the cops, and so forth. And then, of course, there's this property seizure, too, to where if they think that you're involved in some kind of drug traffic or something like that, the cops take all your money and everything they can seize, your house, your everything, cars, everything. And guess where it goes? It goes in the coffers of the police department or the agency that takes the stuff. And, of course, and they use that to finance their program. Well, you can see how that goes round and round. That's a scam where, obviously, they're going to want to set up people, too, and then take their house, take their cars, take their speedboats, take whatever they can get, and it goes into the coffers of the police. I know that they've caught some cops up in Michigan 3, 4, 5 years ago that were into some really bad shit about that, getting a hold of that confiscated property, money, guns, and all that kind of stuff. So, see, the law business, the justice business, is pretty illegal, according to what you would think, the Constitution or anything else. There's not a lot of justice going on, unless you mean just us. The courts are corrupt, judges are corrupt, and perverts and so forth all over the country, like the ones I knew in California ran into. We had the one, I told you about that, this Jew, I forgot his name, down in San Diego. And they were going to remove him from the bench, and you know what he was doing? He liked prostitutes, and he was one of those guys that liked to have the prostitutes pee and defecate on him. That was his type of sex, and that's how bad he was. But yet he never got kicked off the bench. They tried to, but he was still there. The last I heard, see, this is the kind of people you got passing judgment on you. People that are so rotten, they're so corrupt, that they deserve to be hung and flayed, man, I'll tell you that. So that's what's going on in the courts. Well, I see they're trying to get a peace deal going between the Ukrainians and the ethnic Russians in the east part of Ukraine. As far as I'm concerned, it's all crap because it's hundreds, maybe thousands of white people have died innocent homeowner type, worker type people in this thing. And I see people on both sides bragging this and bragging that and how wonderful it is. And they send me all this shit about shooting big cannons and bombing places. And some guys are not wet behind the ears marching down the street, pushing people around with so-called Nazi stuff on their arm and stuff. It's all trash. You don't hear these people crying for the people in the streets in eastern Ukraine who've lost their homes, hundreds of them been killed, everything else. I just can't be into that. I can't be taking sides on it at all, because whenever people start fighting and killing regular working class innocent people, they're wrong. And I don't care what reason they're going to use. And that thing's going to still be getting worse. They're trying to switch leaders now to try to make a peace over there, but I wouldn't touch any of it with a 10-foot pole. I don't give a shit who's the good guys, who's the bad guys. And I'm for the people over there that are living there in peace in their homes and trying to make a living and raise kids and everything, and they're getting the hell bombed out of them, and both sides going, rah, rah, man, we're doing it for the country, as they destroy the country. But I always know how the right wing's going to go on all this kind of stuff. They seem to really enjoy warfare and killing. And I think a lot of people march off to these things and knowing that they'll be able to kill people. And they really don't care, as long as they're told they're the enemy. Well, they'll kill anybody that gets in their way. And they don't know the people there. They're from England, Sweden, Germany, the United States. They go over there and say they're fighting for this great cause, and they're killing regular people. And then they leave. It's sickening. It's not right. I can tell you one thing, that millions of people in the Eastern Europe and Russia are not going to adopt a swastika from World War II. I mean, Russia lost 20 million people. Sure, there were people in Russia that went along with the National Socialists and like that, but the majority of people are never going to do it. And the people in Ukraine or any place else over there, they're not going to do it because they were smashed and trounced and burned out and raped and killed by military forces on both sides, all sides, over there. And if you're going to make any headway in becoming leaders of the people, you got to use some new method. You can't come across with this old right-wing bullshit stuff. And you're definitely not going to get any place with this Hitler worship, with the people who are still alive that's had to live through the crap. Well, this crazy-ass corrupt system better start worrying about water and not so much about guns and bombs and occupying desert over there in North Africa, which is going to be desert here the way it's going. A new study warns the chances of the western states in the U.S. experiencing a multi-decade mega-drought not seen in historical climate records in over 2,000 years has a much higher chance of occurring in the decades ahead than previously realized. In fact, scientists are warning the drought now being experienced in California and elsewhere could be just the beginning of an unprecedented water crisis across the west and southwest regions of the country. The research, a project between scientists at Cornell University and University of Arizona and the U.S. Geological Survey, shows that chances for a decade-long drought this century is now 50-50. And that a drought lasting as long as 35 years, defined as a mega-drought, has a 22-50% chance of occurring. I see. This is what happened. This is what brought Gaddafi down more than anything else over there, because he had not had enough rain in years. They had tremendous drought. They were not raising near enough food to feed their people, and they were running out of money buying the grain from other countries. And that's when all this unrest happens, and he loses the country, and the country goes to crap. And a lot of it was because of the weather. They don't talk about that much. For the southwestern U.S., I'm not optimistic about avoiding real mega droughts, Toby Ault, Cornell Assistant Professor of Earth and Atmospheric Sciences and lead author of the paper, told the Cornell Chronicle. Quote, as we add greenhouse gases into the atmosphere and we haven't put the brakes on stopping this, we're waiting the dice for mega drought. And if such a mega drought does occur, warned Ault, this will be worse than anything seen during the last 2,000 years. And as USA Today notes, the difference now, of course, is the western USA is home of more than 70 million people who weren't here in previous mega droughts. The implications are far more daunting. Well, in one way, it can drive those Mexicans back south. And, of course, they're going to be trying to come east, too. And I think at a certain point, people are going to pick up the guns and resist them. I do believe that, just like the people resisted the Okies coming into California. The implications are far more daunting. The study entitled Assessing the Risk of Persistent Drought Using Climate Module Simulations and Paleoclimate Data used both climate model projections as well as observational paleoclimate information as it looked back over the historic records of drought in the region while also looking forward by using advanced predictive techniques used in to measure the possible impacts of current and future global warming. Now, this is going on all over the earth. It's not just here. It's going on all over the place. And China's got a big problem. I told you years ago that their water table was dropping about 10 feet every year, and maybe faster. And that's that water coming out, I believe, of the Himalayas. But there's several other countries that are wanting that water, too. Now what's going to happen as they all start getting way too thirsty, not getting enough water? When it becomes a club and a gun that's going to control the water. Of course, China will try to move, take over the water. The others will maybe band together and ask Uncle Stupid to come over there and help them. But that's the situation. It's happening all over the earth, and it's happened before. You can read back. One thing they're doing now, too, to get a handle on what really is going on is by looking back in the past. They're going into all the ship's logs that were stored away in museums and maritime museums and so forth like that. And they're taking these young people are taking computers and so forth, and they're going through them bit by bit to get an idea of what the weather, the temperature, or what was going on with nature at the time that this ship was flowing around. There's the one deal they told of a story of a ship there that got stuck in the ice. I forget exactly where it was, and they didn't get out for 2 years. They didn't get out of the damn place for 2 years. Most of them survived. So that's another thing that they're using to try to figure out what's coming. And like I urged the people in California to do when I ran for Congress is to start building massive desalinization plants all along the coast of California, all the big cities, Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, and like that. See, now they're running out of the regular water, and rivers are getting low, and Las Vegas is drying up. But over there in California, if they had started when I told them they should, building these big desalinization plants, and they have improved the state of the art on those things, they could have forestalled a major problem, which now they're going to have, and they're always going to want to close the door after the horse is gone, and they may try to do exactly what I said, but it's going to be maybe too late. just like I told agribusiness when I ran for Congress, you need to go almost totally to drip irrigation and quit using this pit type, putting little trails along and running water through there, because you're losing half the water to evaporation. And so out in the Imperial Valley and up in the San Joaquin Valley, but they, as far as I know, they didn't change anything. They just kept going on, depending on the crap that was coming down to the water, was coming down from the mountains and so forth, which is not really coming down much anymore. What are the people going to do in L.A. and run out of water? What are they going to do in San Francisco? What are they going to do in Vegas? I mean, back through time, if you read history, been many empires fell because they've either lost the ability to produce enough food or have water. So anyhow, that's, if you don't listen, you'll have to feel. That's what my grandma used to tell me. This was from an article. It was in the, where was it? I don't know, some paper up in the Northwest, I believe it was. But anyhow, most of California sits in a D4 exceptional drought area, which in most severe category. Oregon, Arizona, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas loiter in a substantially less severe D1 moderate drought. Ault says climatologists don't know whether the severe western and southwestern drought will continue, but with ongoing climate change, this is a glimpse of things to come. It's a preview of our future, he said. While the 1930s Dust Bowl in the Midwest lasted 4 to 8 years, depending upon the location, a mega drought can last more than 3 decades, which could lead to mass population migration on a scale never before seen in this country. And you know what that's going to lead to. But maybe it should lead to that. Survival of the fittest. And maybe that's the way it's got to go. It's not nice to try to fool Mother Nature. And they've been trying to fool Mother Nature for a long, long time. Well, there's a short report from Northern Colorado. A population boom has been going on for the past 18 months. Traffic has intensified enormously, and it seems the predictions of demographers that a new linear LA would develop along the east base of the Rockies has come true. Here at the north end of the sprawl, developers gloat over the notion that the tri-cities of Greeley, Loveland, and Fort Collins will have a population of nearly 1 million by 2040. Currently about 300,000. Some ask where the water for that million will come from, now let alone as the climate changes and accelerates into extended drought, and the pace of fracking uses millions of gallons of water per well, accelerates the problem also. Yeah, here's another one. Colorado State University here has long prided itself as a center of water research in the arid West, but the academics here have been mostly silent. At a symposium on university research, the academic chair of the meeting said that it is important to be cautious about the results of their scientific investigations into water and energy issues as, quote, we must not offend our patrons, unquote. The corporations and the government agencies which provide the money. Makes one wonder how much cooking the books is done to keep the gravy train going, and nary a word of question about where the water for a million residents would come from. Apparently fearing the wrath of developers, as the article makes clear, the future of the many desert megacities of the U.S. Southwest is indeed precarious. At times, various fantasy proposals are floated about the NAWPA plan to bring water from the upper Yukon River clear across Canada and into the southwestern United States, or in a similar hubristic fantasy to tap into the Great Lakes and bring water from the Great Plains to the southwest. Now, doesn't need a degree in engineering to know these projects have near zero chance of being constructed and functioning. Well, here again, when I ran for office twice in California, I did advocate that very thing, that instead of building oil pipelines from Canada down here, we build pipelines from Canada, make a deal with Canada, and bring massive amounts of water from Canada down here into the Southwest. That kind of, those ideas never even got into the newspaper when I was running for Congress. Just that I was in the KKK. Yeah. Oh, yes, the mega drought approaches. The aquifers are dying out. The reservoirs are drying up. The streams and the lakes are getting smaller. Fracking uses up huge quantities of groundwater. It poisons all the aquifers it touches. However, there's profit for the oligarchy in squeezing the last drop of oil and gas from the depths of the earth. So drill, baby, drill. Frack, baby, frack. When there is no more water, we shall all die. So the oligarchy must pile up whatever pelt it can before it perishes, for the huge balance is all that matters. It is way past the time that these parasites are given a heavy dose of hemp rope or whatever other form of pest control that will remove them. They have become the bubonic plague of the 21st century. These are areas where left and right can agree right down a line, or should. Smart right, smart left. And they should be coming together on these issues. And another thought. One of the things to remember is that California grows a large percentage of the nation's fruits, nuts, and vegetables. A very large percentage. This isn't going to be as easily accomplished in mega drought conditions, of course, if at all. Already, areas in the Central Valley have seriously overutilized their aquifers, so that the ground level has, in some places, dropped 10 feet and more. Food will get more expensive, even as the population is estimated to reach about 450 million by 2050. This is not going to go well, especially considering the penchant of our so-called leaders to resolve issues violently. Yep. Well, I can see them doing like they do in Colombia. The government and the corporations own all the water, and they chain link all the wells and water facilities in and lock them and guard them with armed troops. And you, or the peasants of Colombia, can't get to the water without becoming a revolutionary. Ah! Did you ever ask a progressive or a liberal or even some of these sort of liberal conservatives? Ask them, you're very concerned about the ecology and the environment, right? Oh, yeah. Well, you're worried about the water and not enough food and need alternate types of power and all, need to do that. Oh, yeah. But at the same time, I see you out supporting more millions of Mexicans, the Central Americans, Africans, all kinds of people coming in here. What is your logic? What is your logic if you're trying to protect the environment, the living space, and keep it clean and natural? But you want to let everybody in the world in here? You're fucking nuts. You're absolutely insane. You're Camp of the Saints insane. You know, they had a conference over in Leipzig, Germany this year, and they're all rubbing her hands and crying and screaming about there are too many people. It says here, you're having the core conversation of our time, unquote. That was the message delivered on Tuesday by author Naomi Klein to participants of a conference whose focus is on concrete steps toward a society beyond the imperative of growth, unquote. I'll bet you most of the people there, however, are for open borders and letting all these people in. Klein's opening address to the 4th International Conference on Degrowth for Ecological Sustainability and Social Equity, whatever that is, which kicked off Tuesday in the German city of Leipzig, made perfect sense as the themes of her new book, titled This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate, overlapped those of the conference, that addressing climate crisis is incompatible with current growth-focused economy. Well, also, runaway immigration is too, Naomi. The premise from which my book begins is the one I think we all pretty much agree on, Klein said, that when it comes to addressing climate crisis, we have failed catastrophically. The world's track records on climate action are not something to be proud of, she said, and they have set us on a trajectory to live in a world that could see as much as a 6-degree rise in temperature from pre-industrial levels. Well, that's why we need to concrete over more of the land. And let more people move in, create new cities. Yeah, like I just talked about. They're talking about 1 million people there in Colorado in the next 10, 15 years. When it comes to immigration, these people are very silent. The world's track records on climate action are... Oh, here we go. The status quo is not an option, Klein said. Radical change of some kind, whether physical or political, are our only options left. Well, it's got to be the white race. The minority of the white race come together to kick ass, develop their own answer to the problem. These people are not going to come up with it. They're going to talk about it. And then they're going to go down to the meeting where they say, oh, it's terrible. They're kicking Mexicans out of the country. And the kids come over here and we're so hard-hearted, we make them go back home. This is why the climate crisis challenges centrist liberals, most of all because they subscribe to an ideology that is so resistant to the idea of radical change, to the idea of anything but incremental reformist change. As she argues in This Changes Everything, she said in her address that our failure, most of all, has to do with tragic bad timing of this particular crisis. Scientific consensus on emissions drive carbon crisis has been in for over 50 years, yet it took until the late 1980s when noted climate scientist James Hansen testified before Congress about the link between emissions and warming for it to hit a turning point in North America, she explained. However, one thing, Tommy says, you forgot to mention population growth. Population growth. There are no answers if you don't cut population growth. And there are no answers if you don't get things moving in the right direction. In other words, the right people running the show, the white people running the show. And the crummy white people, get them out of the way. But the demographics and the growth of the population is where so much of the problem comes from. But almost all liberals come down on the side of more and more. Open up the door. It's crazy. These people are nuts. You can't solve a problem. Yet, she said, this same moment in time marked a so-called triumph of liberal ideology. It was the time of the rise of free trade and WTO trade tribunals, austerity policies that clashed with measures that could prevent and deal with climate disruption. The global north's refusal to own up to climate debts is owed the global south, and the privatization of energy sector fueled by the profit motive. These liberal triumphs systematically sabotage the actions that we need to respond to this crisis. No, you need a crash program on birth control, especially on the non-white erases. Otherwise, there's no answer. You can have weather change, which you're going to have. There's always weather change. But if you outbreed your food supply and your living area, you're going to die. I mean, as simple as that. But there is zero population organization. They do a pretty good job. But on the street, you stop one of these liberal types and say, well, what do you think about it? Don't we need to cut our population down by half?
Oh, yeah, that'd be good, man. That's good. Hey, you want a joint? No, okay.
Well, here's what you do. You take 25 million sons of bitchin' Mexicans and it's assorted people from everywhere else and throw them out of the country and don't let them come back. And then you wouldn't start running short on stuff. You'd have plenty of water. I mean, you know, you can live in a desert. You just don't have enough water to build a city. People have been living in deserts for thousands of years, millions of years. And usually there's enough water to sustain that population. But when you build cities like Phoenix or Las Vegas and expect to be always have plenty of water and everything's going to be wonderful, forget it. It ain't going to happen, baby. So when you run into these liberals, if you feel like arguing with them, ask them a few of these questions, man. You can't have it both ways. You can't be sob sisters to the world. Take them all in. Double your population without running out of everything. Especially when the ruling class is spending trillions of dollars blowing up things all over the world. Just blowing up things. So unless these people want to talk about all these other problems, but at the same time talk about population control, I mean extreme population control, then you can't solve the problem. And nature will solve the problem because people will go to war against the other and kill each other off by the millions. And nature's answer will be that. Tremendous amounts of people will war and kill each other. And that'll bring the population down. Probably not enough, but a lot more than it is doing today. And of course, being saddled with crazy-ass insane religions and all that kind of stuff, that's just another nail in the coffin. Oh yeah, there's a good movie around called Blue Thunder. With Ray Schneider. A couple of my friends have reminded me about that and police overreaction and crowd control. Blue Thunder, look it up. Got a note here from Stray Dog. Race is the most important factor in every human decision. Race is the basis for all society. Race is the driving force behind all of human action. Let the niggers police themselves. Don't put the white cops in a position where they have to police the niggers. Thanks for keeping things simple and staying away from those big words. Keeping our genetics pure. I follow in Dr. Mengele's footsteps. We search for a cure. The brutal cold will help. Okay, Stray Dog. Well, it looks like we're going to get more diversity in the comic book area. Gene Luen Yang, I guess he's Chinese, delivered a moving speech at the 14th Annual National Book Festival's award gala in Washington, D.C. last weekend. In it, the comic behind the American-born Chinese, unquote, boxers and saints, unquote, and the shadow hero, unquote, talked about the fear that keeps writers from exploring characters of different races. We have to allow ourselves the freedom to make mistakes, including cultural mistakes, in our first drafts. I believe it's okay to get cultural details wrong in your first draft. It's okay if stereotypes emerge. It just means that your experience is limited and that you're human. Just make sure you iron them out before the final draft. Make sure they're diverse enough. Make sure you do your homework. Make sure your early readers include the people who are part of the culture you're writing about. Make sure your editor has the insider knowledge to help you out. If they don't, consider hiring a freelance editor who does. Also, it's okay if stereotypes emerge in the first drafts of your colleagues. Correct them. Definitely correct them. But do so in a spirit of generosity. Remember how soul-wrenching the act of writing is, how much courage it took for the writer to put words down on a page. And let's say you do your best. You put in all the effort you can. But then when your book comes out, the internet gets angry. You slowly realize that, for once, the internet might be right. You made a cultural, racial misstep. If this happens, take comfort in the fact that even flawed characters can inspire. Apologize if necessary, resolve to do better, and move on. Whitey. Let me see here. Let your fear drive you to do your homework. But no matter what, don't ever let your fear stop you. Read the whole thing over at the Washington Post under an article signed by Angry Asian Man. I guess he feels he's not being treated properly. So that's how it goes, pushing diversity, of course, in the comic books, which they've been doing ever since Superman. Yeah, Superman was a creation of the Jews, and several of those Marvel comic characters were creations of the Jews, and they were used as war propaganda against Germany and so forth during World War II. That's why Superman was invented by the Jews, to be the super American hero fighting the nasty Nazis. It's been a long time ago, but remember Mitt Romney? This goes back a ways. I dug this up. We should be judging the presidential candidates by their actions and what comes out of their mouths, but everyone is asking if Mitt Romney donned brown face for his television appearance on Mexican Univision. From message boards to Gawker, Jezebel, Media Takeout, and even Upworthy, a site that usually keeps things positive, pointed out Romney looked like he got a bad spray tan. Jezebel's Aaron Gloria Ryan asked, did Mitt Romney fucking seriously just wear brown makeup so Latin voters might think he's tan enough to support? And then there's Media Takeout, the gossip website that claims to be the most visited urban website in the world. They just called Romney out. Quote, you see, dude tried to trick Hispanic voters into voting for him by painting his face brown. Huffington Post published a similar post shortly before the post you're reading now went live also. There's a few posts on Tumblr that are also thriving. Quote, I was really hoping that this wasn't true because this is pretty far out for anyone. And I hoped it was a really bad tan where he covered his hands and didn't turn over. But it literally stops at the jawbone. It just stops. Go to 214 and look at the perfect line. What's the plap? Huinavi, I don't know what that word is, wrote alongside a screen capture of the Univision forum. Anyhow, that must have happened during the campaign for president. And that's how rotten these guys are. I mean, they'll do anything. They will do anything to get a little bit higher up on the rung and get a few more votes. So I would expect pretty soon we're going to see more white guys spraying themselves with black paint. Yeah. Now, I told you about how the, liberal, progressive, whatever you want to call them, are, going crazy over environmental problems, but turn their head when it comes to immigration. Well, this article is a little older, back in May, but the Sierra Club, one of the largest, oldest environmental organizations in the nation, announced last month its support for a path to citizenship for illegal aliens. It was a unanimous decision among the group's board of directors and marks a definitive break with the group's troubled history on immigration, a history that has been also plagued the environmental movement broadly. The arc of Sierra Club's evolution starts with a dubious, if not hostile, perspective on immigration that the club carried in the 60s. The theory was that immigration drives unsustainable population growth, which then drains resources and harms the environment. Which is true, you dumbass! That perspective shifted to a hard line against immigration in the 1980s, then to a neutral position in the 90s, before finally coming around in the 21st century to advocating on behalf of illegal aliens and other immigrants. The announcement was mostly a codification of work Sierra Club had already been doing lately, such as fighting against building a wall on the U.S.-Mexican border to block migration to the United States, but by officially adopting a stance that endorses a pathway to citizenship for illegal aliens. Sierra, like the Republican Party, is recognizing the shift in demographic matters. Well, then forget protecting the environment. If you can't control the population, no matter what race they are, but it's more important to control the brown flood and the black flood or whatever. So here you are. Are you supporting the Sierra Club? Do you have friends that are sending the money to the Sierra Club? Well, forget it. Now, we had people in the Sierra Club, and they were doing some good work, but they got rousted. The announcement was mostly a codification of work Sierra Club had already been doing lately, such as fighting against building a wall on the U.S.-Mexican border to block migration to the United States. But by officially adopting a stance that endorsed the pathway to citizenship of undocumented illegal aliens, Sierra, well, no, I read that before, didn't I? Sierra has more than 2 million members, many of them white and elderly, see? Betrayed by our own people. In order for their numbers to grow, recruitment will have to reflect what America looks like today and in the future, which is younger and more racially diverse. For Sierra to do that, though, they have to reconcile their history, which didn't always endorse open pathways to U.S. citizenship or even its membership. Well, close your doors, asshole. Catherine Tekaquin, executive director of the California-based National Network for Immigrant and Refugees Rights. I'll show you rights. Sat on Sierra's 8-member Committee on Population Growth in 1994. The organization's general membership was roughly 93% white at the time, says Tekaquin, and many wanted Sierra to take controversial positions on immigration and reproduction to advocate the reduced population growth. Well, of course, that's the only way you're going to protect the environment. The Population Committee had equal numbers, women and men. Tekaquin says that all of the women were pro-immigration and championed reproductive rights, while the men were steadfastly anti-immigration. Yeah, you can see that with churches, too. Women dragging their white men into churches. And women, I think, generally tend to be more liberal, much more liberal. But I couldn't say exactly what that percentage would be. But, see, this guarantees race war. Sometimes, someplace, civil war, race war, whatever you want to call it. Because with the increase in population, with no brakes on population and no brakes on immigration, it's got to happen. It's not nice to fool Mother Nature, because she's going to come back and kick your ass. So, anyhow, it doesn't do any good, I guess, to change the minds of these people in the Sierra Club and these various groups. Because it's a fixed game. You go in there, sort of like when, trying to remember his name, who wrote that book about the Jews and who worked for the revisionist outfit, Institute for Historical Review, out west, when he, as an atheist, tried to enter an atheist meeting with Madeline Murray O'Hare to talk about the Jewish question, and they threw him out. So that's the way that goes. I mean, you know, they could talk environment all they want. If you try to walk in and say, well, wait a minute, too many people destroy the environment, you're out of here, man, you racist bastard. So if they don't listen, they'll have to feel, you know, put grease on the tracks, let it go. The train's a runaway train. Grease the tracks, stand out of the way, let it go, because it's going to crash. And Mother Nature says it'll have to crash. There's no other way out. So that's it for today. Old Terrible Tommy's off of here in 14.5, and I'll be back tomorrow on Thursday. And 14.5, and just shut up, observe, and report. Don't risk your life and limb over a lot of this stuff, because it won't make a bit of difference, and nature's going to have to take care of it. Our enemies are committing suicide themselves. We don't have to help them. The empire's eating its tail right now. It's busy eating its tail. It don't even realize it. I guess there's no pain in eating the tail, but there's going to be pain when you get up to the rear end. Later.
big mistake. I bet you the farm, it's in somebody's boathouse. It never made the ramp and it's still on the lake. But try to get a warrant, dream all you want. You won't be searching any lakefront home. Justice is blind to them that own it. Money don't talk when it's one of their own. Money don't talk when it's one of their own. Money don't talk when it's one of their own. Does the governor know who killed the fisherman? Does the governor know who killed the fisherman?
James McMurtry, the governor.